The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
Hey there, it's a Wednesday, and I can't believe we're approaching the halfway point of October. Simply a blur. Here's what we know. Baylor, Oklahoma State, that's been postponed this week. We're keeping an eye on LSU, Florida, after an outbreak on the Gators team with five new positive tests on Tuesday. According to the school, 19 positive tests around the program in recent days, according to sources to ESPN. So Florida's paused team activities yesterday due to the abundance of caution as they deal with the COVID-19 outbreak. Questions remain if that game will happen. Here on the podcast, David Pollock will join us with his dude of the week, the game he's most looking forward to. And, you know, I think it just begins and ends with Georgia, Alabama. And we will put him through the ringer on making a pick if he goes against his dogs. Plus, Ivan Maizel will share his thoughts on the season so far, what is missing right now in college football, how Mack Brown has turned things around at North Carolina again, and the pressure at Texas that has caused a big stir with the alumni and the players that prompted Tom Herman to issue a statement on Monday coming off the loss to Oklahoma. I want to remind everybody here, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe, rate, and review. We enjoy the five stars and the feedback. Always, always appreciated. And enjoy the pod. All right, let's bring in David Pollock on a Wednesday. And let's get right to it, because there's going to be a lot of junk that we need to sort through when it comes to our picks that you're just going to throw out. And I'm going to hear excuse after excuse. Let's just go dude of the week. Who's your dude of the week after pouring through some film?
Oh, man, I tell you what, I'm not going to go to Alabama. Sorry. Too soon. I'm not going to go to LSU because, my goodness, that's not happening. LSU, oof, boy, are we going to cover that later?
Because that was, oh yeah, we're going to cover
okay.
that.
Okay, I'm sure we can get Kerbstreet back on here again for talk about LSU if we want to again. But no, I mean, I tell you what, defense around college football is optional right now. It's definitely optional. It's driving me absolutely bananas. It's driving me nuts. But if you want to see a freak, by the way, it makes sense to be a dude of the week kind of guy. Jalen Carter for Georgia, University of Georgia, number 88. Did you see his touchdown, Kevin?
Yeah, I did.
I mean, first of all, that's a 300-plus pound man. He's a freak. I mean, he's the next in line to be one of the great defensive tackles, you know, at Georgia. Now, listen, they're not hurting for any of them, but just watch 88 play on goal line packages for Georgia. Watch 88 play defensive tackle, true freshman. He broke his leg his senior year, actually, and recovered from it nicely. Now, contributing and just going to be the next superstar. But you start watching him on tape and watch him get off the rock at 300 plus pounds. He's got something special to him. He's going to be a dude in the future that we'll all be talking about.
You brought him up before. You mentioned him a couple of weeks ago. I remember specifically because of the 88 and how he pops off the screen. And let's clear some stuff up. You know, I know on Monday we were pretty hard on LSU and what the film showed and what we've seen consistently so far in the first three games. We're seeing that not just in the college level, we're seeing that in the NFL level, the lack of tackling. It is, you know, I know we're in a pandemic, but it has been not just this year. It continues to grow over the last couple of years, the lack of tackling on every single level.
What you said is important, Kevin. You said, I know we're in a pandemic, but that is a majority of the reason why. I've told this story too before on here, but I had Georgia players coming over here a couple months into the pandemic and working out in my gym. Like, they were fat and sloppy and out of shape like a mug, man. I mean, bad out of shape. Like, I was running circles around them, and I'm old. I mean, I was concerned. I was like, dude, you guys got to get on this. Like, you got to do something about this. But then to go a step further, everything, all the Zoom meetings, all the, you know, no workouts for months without any access to a facility. Here's the thing. You also, they didn't tackle in spring. They didn't tackle in fall camp so much because you were contact tracing. You were worried about that. That's a legit reason why you've seen worse tackling. Listen, tackling sucks, period. Like, it's been changing throughout time regardless, and it's been getting worse. But this couples it makes it it makes your eyes hurt. This is the worst it's ever been because I think because of the lack of practice time, lack of actual tackling and lack of strength, lack of conditioning, all that stuff plays into it this year where it's just the worst I've seen.
Do you anticipate it's going to get better? Do you think this 100%. Is just a preseason feel and the vibe that usually the first two or three games are, we're going to pay your school $1 million. Please play us so we can win 59-3 and feel good and everybody gets in shape. Is that what we're missing here in the beginning?
Well, not only that, Kevin, well, think about it. When you play that 59-3 team, the week leading up, you're practicing and you're tackling. Like, then you play a game. You play another cupcake game usually early in the season. Well, now you got a couple weeks of the season into it. You know what everybody's strengths and weaknesses. You know what they can do. You got stuff on tape that you can take young guys and start to develop them as you go on throughout the season. So 100%. I think like Alabama. Alabama's young. I mean, they're really young up front and not super experienced. Like, listen, some of this stuff it has nothing to do with experience. Some of this stuff has to do with, want to and I think what they're doing defensively, I think they'll change a little bit what they're doing defensively. Some of that plays into it, but I do think we'll see tackling over the next 3 or 4 weeks improve once everybody's got some games under their belt and more practices and more hitting, because nobody's worried about contact tracing now. The testing has been under protocol and they've got everybody locked in. And listen, it's going to happen when it's going to happen, but I promise you, just like Ken Niumatalolo having meetings in person now, just like those people having face-to-face and contact, it's going to happen more and more, and I think it'll improve.
Well, Pollock, then how do you explain, and this is not to just focus on one team, but how do you explain, the discipline of what we're seeing from a team like Clemson, that it feels like they're separating themselves when it comes to both sides of the football? And granted, people will question who have they played, but it's not their fault. They still come out there, and they perform at a high level on both sides.
Yeah, and I think there are some programs. Georgia deserves a lot of respect for that too, right? I mean,
defensively, yes.
Yep. I think those are the only two off the top of my head now that I can say, are playing great defense. Defense that I point to and say that's elite. So how do you do it? I think Venables has created a culture where those guys are just busting their butt all the time, and it's always been non-negotiable. And they've done it, and they've kudos to them. I don't know how they've done it. It's not lack of competition. Derek King's hard to tackle, bro. I got news for you. Like, that guy's a freak. Miami's got freaks all over the field, but you see them swarm and play with passion, and it's impressive. So you see Georgia play against Tennessee, the defense. It's impressive. They've got those two teams. To me, they've had a secret sauce. And by the way, you know what you need is a system that you've been around for a long time, guys that are very experienced in the system, guys that have been through a bunch of battles, that have been through a bunch of wars, and a coach is going to keep their thumb to the grindstone and grind them and hold them accountable and demand that stuff. And I think, you look at Georgia, all the guys they play on defense, they've got so much experience that have been through all this stuff so many times. And Clemson, you got so many guys that have been through so many big games, and you infuse some young talent, obviously, that helps the process too. So they've got a secret sauce that a lot of people are looking for.
Okay. And we off that Georgia conversation here, I gave you some love on SportsCenter yesterday when I talked about, we highlighted the Georgia defense versus the Bama offense, and you brought it up on Monday that, styles make great matchups. What must Georgia do against Alabama? And I'm not talking about their defense. I'm talking about their offense against Bama's defense.
I think Stetson Bennett's feet have to be involved in the game plan. And it was last week more than you've seen. By the way, you want to talk about, I think people naturally, people always do this. You can call this whatever you want to call this. Usually, let me speak from personal experience. How about this? Every award banquet I went to, Kevin, every single one, Tommy Harris, Derek Johnson, whoever, Sean Andrews, speed, power, explosiveness. These guys are just playmakers. They're dynamic. When I got talked about, it was plays hard, hustles, coach on the field. Okay. So there's a stigma. Whether you want to admit Wes Welker, he's savvy.
He's gritty. Gritty.
Gritty, tough, coach on the field. Well, here's the thing. Stetson Bennett is an athlete. They tracked him on the GPS last week going 20 miles an hour. 20. Like, 20 miles an hour is elite. That's fast, bro. So he can pick him up and put him down. Now, listen, he's not Corral. He's not, the offense isn't based around his ability to do that, but he has to be a part of the game plan. You have to shift and motion and move pre-snap a lot against Alabama. You watch it, man. When one guy moves, when you yak and you take a tight end across the line of scrimmage, three guys move. Dude, I want to do that before the snap, and then I want to move him back, and then I want to move a running back. So I think formationally, get Alabama moving. You know, I could sit here and say they got to run the football, but everybody has to run the football. I think Stetson Bennett has to be a big player. George Pickens has to move around the formation. Last week, they bracketed Pickens all game. Tennessee did. And bracketed, do people know what that means? When you bracket, that means you always got somebody in, you always got somebody out on Pickens. Okay, so you're taking two guys and taking him out of the ballgame. You're making sure that you bracket the coverage and basically think of it as a double team. He's going to get double teamed the whole game. If you keep him in the same spot, Kevin, you can double team. If you put him in the slot, a lot harder to double team. If you move him around and play where is Waldo, it's a lot harder to double team him. So I think moving the defense side to side, shifts and motions have to be a part of the game plan. QB run has to be a part of the game plan. And then moving Pickens around and attacking man coverage. It's not a secret. Alabama's going to give you man coverage. Kyrus Jackson's been ridiculous for Georgia. Number 10's been their best receiver thus far, and he's been dynamic in the slot. So I think those are the keys for Georgia's offense when going against Alabama's defense.
It's a great sign seeing Jackson involved because you have that extra threat there because all the attention will be to Pickens. What are your thoughts on what Pickens did with Garantano, like spraying the bottle right there? It's just some of the, you know, Kirby afterwards said something. He got an unsportsmanlike conduct as well. Like, there's a certain point where it's like, come on, man. You just, come on. In a game like this, we don't need this kind of BS.
I think it's immaturity. You know, it's just dumb. It's Kirby compared it to, what are we, 7 and 8 years old?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good comparison. Listen, as a player, Kevin, and I was an emotional player. Like, I was emotional. I was super emotional, jumping up and down, running all over the field. Like, you also have to understand it, and it happens for everybody at different times. My dumb penalties cost my team. And so I have to find the balance between, here's what I love about Pickens. The dude competes his butt off. If you watch him block, he doesn't block like a wide receiver. He wants to put his face in there and destroy you. Like, he's committed to blocking. He's committed to his team. You just got to realize there's a line, and right. And listen, we all have this in our life, right? We all have this where we cross the line and we wish we wouldn't have crossed the line. And Pickens just has to have more of those moments where he goes up into that line and then he stops and then he regroups himself and thinks about it a little bit more. And listen, we've all had those stupid moments when we're younger, and it's something that he's just got to continue to grow and mature, and it's not going to be the last time somebody, a kid does something like this or gets a 15-yard flag, because you see it every single week with retaliations and stuff like that. You just got to realize at some point, I'm costing my team.
Young man has all the talent in the world, like all the talent, and I'm glad you brought up his blocking and his competitive streak, because you could see that if you watch him. It's just making sure that he stays in the game and it's controlling the emotions the entire game. Passion is one thing. It's just going overboard and costing your team. And a game like this, you can't afford that.
And that's easy for Kevin being, you know, 45 or 55, however old you are, to say that to an 18-year-old kid, to a 19-year-old kid. You know, it's easy for us to say that, but you know, part of what makes players great is playing with chips on their shoulders and
playing with
an attitude of like, dude, I hate you. I'm going to kill you. It's just it's a fine dynamic, right? Like, it's just not I'm never going to like, just like jumping off sides. Defensive lineman jumps off sides. It's OK because you're supposed to be on edge. You're supposed to be up into that line. But let's not make a habit of it. Right. Let's not make it happen all the time.
By the way, I'm 45. And I
nailed it. How about
okay.
that? I thought it was 45 to 55. I knew it was in that range.
I hate that you even went further than 45 because you're such a punk. I will say this, though. There are many people on that sideline who are as competitive as Pickens who are not getting the water bottle and spraying somebody coming off the sidelines. And
you're right.
You know,
right.
Kirby brought up, you know, 7, 8-year-old. My 8-year-old who plays flag football knows not to do that.
Hey, my 12-year-old does as well.
It's not appropriate. You want to beat the heck out of the guy on the other side, but you're not just going to spray somebody like that. So I think that there's a fine line of, you know, your competitive spirit, and also then just, you know, don't be a fool. Don't let something take over and
don't hurt your team.
It's hard to justify a competitive spirit by making something as silly of a mistake of spraying somebody with a water bottle. I'm not making this the focal point because, again, his competitive spirit has gotten him in some trouble. You know, we saw at the end of last season, he's just got to find a way to channel that in a productive manner. That's it. That's all I'm saying.
No doubt. Agreed.
And it's with the stakes so high heading into Tuscaloosa, he can't afford to let that emotion take over because they're going to need him. And they're going to need him for every single down on the field for this offense to go back and forth against the Bama team that's going to score at will. We seem to be, you know, I think the Heisman conversation, obviously early without the Big Ten and the Pac-12, is focused and justifiably on, you know, Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne. And when you look at what Mac Jones has done and Najee Harris has done and what, you know, Jalen Waddle has done, what are your impressions about this offense? Are we watching the best offense in the country there in Alabama?
Yeah. Well, I think most complete. This offensive line is the best it's been in a couple years. I can confidently, Najee Harris is the best he's been, and he's arguing for the best back in the country. By the way, his development over the years has been really cool because when he got to Alabama, he was 6'3", 250 and 245 and already a freak, but he didn't have a clue how to hit a hole. Like, he didn't have a clue how to set up blocks. Big time credit and kudos to him, man. Like, he's super developed now, and he has a set of blocks and be patient. Great receiver out of the backfield. Like, he's really developed. I know everybody's heaping a ton of praise on Mac Jones. But like, if you're going to ask me again, if I'm going to go into my defensive coordinator mode and who I don't want to play, I don't want Trevor Lawrence. I mean, I don't want any part of that, by the way. And you know what really, this past week watching Trevor Lawrence, I loved it. I loved him. Did you see him get whacked?
Oh, gosh, I hold my breath each time because I just think about his future on Sundays.
Well, he got destroyed. Well, stop thinking about his future. He's playing football now. Stop.
I get it, but still, at the same time, when you have a certain lead and you're still in the fourth quarter and you're taking some licks, I worry about the young man. I can do that.
I hear you. Whatever. He's playing for college for Clemson. That's the most important thing right now. Forget the pros. Anyways, listen, he got licked. He stayed down, came off the field for a play, came back. Later in the drive, he runs the football down near the goal line, runs in the end zone, runs somebody over, slams the ball and talks trash and got a personal foul. Again, I didn't hear you talk about that. You talked about Pickens. I'm just playing. But
you're being a punk right now.
I love that, Kevin. I absolutely love that. I love when he's got that fire lit and you see that passion, you see that energy. Man, that is so awesome. I'll take the 15. I'm going to pull him over and I'm going to act like I'm yelling at him, bro. I'm literally going to be like, dude, what are you doing? Like, Trevor, that was awesome. I love your emotion. So on camera, it's going to look like I'm cussing him and I'm pissed at him. But I'm gonna be like, dude, way to compete. Way to light up. Way to stay competitive. Way to respond when you get knocked down. Like, so I think that I just love that. And I wouldn't want to defend that. So I think Alabama's offense with Waddle, obviously, and the weapons scare the mess out of you with Najee Harris and a complete offense. But I don't think it's the best offense in the country. And Justin Fields hadn't played yet either for Ohio State, who's going to be another one that's going to be a pain in the butt.
Yes, and we're saying this without sight unseen of Ohio State and the Big Ten playing football. And by the way, comparing Trevor Lawrence, the emotion on the field after what happened in the situation and then trash talking after scoring a touchdown to spraying a water bottle on the sidelines, there's no comparison. So take it easy over there when it comes to, you know, why bring up one, I don't bring up the other. Come on now, you're being ridiculous.
It's okay. Sunshine doesn't do anything wrong. Don't worry about
that. No, I didn't say that. I definitely didn't say that. You're putting a ton of words in my mouth.
By the way, I loved it. I thought it was different too. I thought Pickens was stupid. I thought Trevor's was awesome, but that's just me.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, a little freaking giving me those side jabs.
Kevin,
there.
I'm always going to jab you, bro. There's
always.
No doubt about it, homie. So just get used to it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm used to it. The audience that's listening sometimes are like, wait. What's Pollock saying about Nagani? Let's talk quickly here about we touched base a little bit on Monday. You've had enough film to watch. What are you seeing from a team like LSU? And I bring this team up because they go on the road to Columbia, obviously dealing with Hurricane Delta pending coming in, so they got to travel. Now there's question marks about, you know, can they play against Florida? Not because of them, but because of the outbreak of COVID-19 with the Florida team. And you know, five new positive tests yesterday, the Gators pausing team activities yesterday due to an abundance of caution. 19 positive tests around the program in recent days, according to sources at ESPN. So now their potential game is up in the air in the swamp. No one said anything, but obviously you can't ignore the news. What's your advice to LSU right now? Is it just, hey, let's keep everything simple? I mean, Eddie O has brought that up, you know, this week.
Let me talk about that from a defensive perspective, because one thing I don't think people understand. People don't understand. Yes, I should run a zone defense. Okay. Say I'm running cover two defense, right? Okay. By formation, my assignment is different. When somebody motions and somebody, I have trips, I have twins. Like, say I'm playing corner. Okay, I'm playing corner. It's cover two. I'm supposed to build a fence. I should be 1 to 6 yards off the ball. I'm keying one. If one goes inside, I have to look up two. If two goes inside, I have to look up three. Like, it's not as simple as just, hey, go play zone defense. Does that make sense? Like, I just don't – it takes time to build continuity in a new system for LSU, going from a 3-4 to a 4-3. Different alignment up front. It takes time to be able to run coverages and to be able to continue to adjust. LSU's defense stunk at the beginning of last year too, and continue to evolve to where they could throw in and sprinkle in zone defenses. So I think that it'll take time for them to change who they are. One thing that's not negotiable, Kevin, is effort. Effort isn't negotiable, and there's not a lot of great effort on that defense. And listen, I don't like calling people's effort out. And I think it's a tough thing to do, by the way. Especially if you ain't played the game and you have no clue how much physical exertion it takes to play the game. Like, I played the game and there's a lot of guys passing down hits. Okay. And there's a lot of guys that need more accountability in that locker room that I hope will understand this. And listen, I'm doing a tape on this. Well, if they don't play, obviously it won't work, but I've already got my clips and I've already done a tape on this for College Game Day. Cause it bothered me so much. But they got to get rid of the busts. They got to get off blocks a lot better. They got to be more willing to run to the football, fly to the football, play with better energy. A lot of energy has to do with tackling, by the way, and endurance. So I think those are a few basic things that stick out to me right away from them.
Taylor, did you hear that little insult there from Pollock when he went, you don't play the game on us. Do you know that? You don't play the game. Come on. You can still see if somebody's providing any effort, right? I mean, whether you play the game or not, you can still see it.
But your eyes don't lie. I get it. I understand what you're saying. But here's the thing. You don't understand what it takes and the exertion it takes to push a 300-pound man and then turn and run and then line up again and do it again and line up again and do it again. Like, most people in America would tap out. Most people would be like, all right, I'm tired. I'm exhausted. So I struggle when people sit there behind a desk and a lot of people that don't understand there are circumstances. Like, for example, Florida. The reason I switched my pick last week from Florida to A&M, Kevin, is because the more I watch Florida's defense, the more I don't see enough bodies to rotate in and out. And I thought they would get worn down against A&M. Like, it's a hard thing to do. That's why it's an advantage to be Clemson. That's why it's an advantage to be Georgia, where you're just rotating waves of people in and out that are only playing 30-something snaps, 40 snaps at the most, as opposed to guys that are playing 70, 80 snaps and your tongue's dragging on the ground and it just takes a toll out of you physically. So if you haven't experienced it, man, it's hard for me to listen to people that haven't gone through that, understand that. And just like me, Kevin, if you're trying to tell me how to host SportsCenter, I don't know the ins and outs.
You definitely don't know the ins and outs.
No,
you would struggle and flop each and every time.
Are you I would flop because you have to be so dialed in and organized. And bro, that ain't me. I'm a fly by the seat of my pants, like, hey, squirrel, something shiny. So, like, I want people to understand that you can't just look at one play in a snapshot and go, that guy's loafing terribly. Okay, did we watch the six plays before that he played and he ran across the field? He's exhausted. Like, get him out of the game. You know what I'm saying?
That's an interesting observation, and I can buy the previous six plays, he's busting his butt, and on that seventh play, and they don't have enough bodies. I can definitely buy that, especially when we're looking at these times where, you know, rosters are missing players. Like, for example, Virginia Tech had at least 15 players out against the North Carolina team that's just scoring left and right at will. The LSU situation, we're seeing that in a variety of places where tackling's not a priority, and you don't have the depth, and there's miscommunication. I think, going to be a huge storyline as the season continues, not just in the SEC, not just in the Big 12, not just in the ACC, in every single conference moving forward. And we're going to see something like that. Maybe some ugliness in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 early on. Well, we're used to seeing, you know, once November rolls around and we're going to see the SEC play optimum, we're going to see the ACC and the Big 12 play optimum, and then suddenly we're going to see, wait a second, the Big Ten doesn't look right and the Pac-12 doesn't look right, because they're going through the, you know, the motions of what we're seeing right now with these other conferences that get to play early on. All right, so what's the game you're going to be watching this week?
Georgia-Bama.
Like, that's the obvious. Like, is there another game that
I'm just saying, bro? I mean, you asked me for a game. Like, there is no other game besides Georgia Bama. Florida LSU would have been awesome. Yeah. If they play that game. Kentucky Tennessee to me is good. Kentucky off to a rough 1-2 start, and you could see that team easily could be 3-0. I mean, a missed extra point in overtime, that sucks. I mean, that's terrible. You know, that's an awful way to lose. Could have beat Auburn week one, had some, you know, the pick six, or not the pick right at the goal line, you know, that they could have taken off. So I think Kentucky Tennessee will be a good one. Can Mississippi State straighten it out? By the way, 20 straight possessions without a score. 20. Wow. 20 straight possessions without a score. And I went and watched that tape too, by the way, because I wanted to see what Mississippi State was doing. Man, a lot of, again, Mike Leach putting in his system, you know, it was easy week one because what happened? LSU played man almost exclusively and made the reads. When you play man coverage, Kevin, the reads are very simple. There is no, I have to read safeties and read this stuff. Like, it's very simple. It's cover one. Like, I'm getting man across the board. I can take shots. I know exactly where things are at. And now you've seen with this offense, you know, I wanted to see what it was. Well, they get a pick on a screen, by the way, that had nothing to do with Costello. Costello got hit when he was throwing to the left sideline one time, that he got hit as he was throwing it, so it ended up being a pick on the sidelines. And then he throws the pick in the end zone right before the half, which was the killer that made this game, that kind of could have made this game really interesting. He throws it to his receiver, it goes through his receiver's hands, and it goes right into a defender. So it's not all that, but I saw a lot of route running in the same spot. Like, when you watch Mike Leach's offenses over the years, they're covering the whole field, bro. They're getting in gaps. Like, so the difference between an air raid and a lot of systems, and a lot of systems are becoming this, by the way, but when they run off the ball, Kevin, they don't have a route they're running. They're running to grass. Okay. So if they read the leverage of the defender and they realize, and I'm in the slot and it's cover two, they realize, okay, I'm going to run a seven and run to the hole of cover two. You know, does that make sense? Like, yeah. They're going to read your coverage, your leverage, and find open spots. I saw a lot of guys running right across the field into each other at the same level, the same depth. I saw guys break into the middle of the field at the same spot, and you're like, oh no, that's not good. That can't happen.
Okay. But how much do you buy this thing with Mike Leach, where afterwards he makes comments like, we're going to have to check some of our group and figure out who really wants to play here, because any malcontents, we're going to have to purge a couple of those. This happens anytime you take over a program. And he's questioning a lot of the you know, the environment, the roster. And it just felt like, granted, you're transitioning and you're taking over, but you can't just have all the
it's about my system and look what I've done. And yes, we just beat LSU. And then back to back weeks, your offense doesn't show up. And then it feels like you are now pushing it on the kids and the players instead of just taking some responsibility on yourself. Now, he said, you know, coaches have to make some adjustments. But I just felt like after that game, where is the leadership from Mike Leach afterwards? And then all of a sudden it's now, hey, you know, we gotta see who wants to be here. Does the tape show that some kids don't want to be there? What do you see from what he is saying to what the tape is showing?
Well, and here's another thing too, that's, you know, when you're not 100% sure of what you're doing, you never go 100 miles an hour. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of, when you don't know where you're exactly supposed to be and you're still learning on the fly, there's a tendency for a lot of people to have some apprehensive and not go full go, because you're kind of like, oh, I think I'm supposed to be here, but maybe I'm not. Listen, Mike Leach is an awesome personality. He's a gem for college football. Mike Leach is not always going to relate to his players really well. He's a different bird, dude. He does not beat to the same drummer as us. He does not follow the same treasure map, would be a good way.
You know, that's a good one.
He's a different dude, man. And so I think there's some people that are going to absolutely hate him, and there's some people that's going to love him. And it's not going to, Mississippi State's not going to turn into a program that they're getting 5-star recruits left and right, because that's never been what he's done. He's never done that in his life. That's not who he is. So he does it with less talent and does it well. And that's, I think he'll have to, the roster will have to change, and he ain't going to change.
No, he's not.
I don't think he's going to change. He's going to continue to say crazy things. And that's just the way he is and the way he talks. And how it goes in Mississippi will be interesting. He's not going to turn the corner and be an elite recruiter by any stretch, but can he find a great quarterback that can spin it and receivers that start to understand his system and be a pain in the butt to everybody else? Listen, that LSU win was great, and it was awesome. It was awesome sound bites afterwards, and then Wingland wasn't available and all that stuff, but you just got the crap kicked out of you 2 weeks in a row. So I'm going to need you to respond offensively and find something that, you know, has success, because you got a ton of attention week one, and since then it hasn't been real good.
It's interesting, and we'll go to our picks right now, because Mississippi State is only a 6.5-point dog against A&M, and some of these lines you look and you're like, whoa, hey, okay, there's a
big
lot
time
of unknown.
High. Big time high.
I understand
big
that,
time
but
low.
We'll see if Mississippi State can start scoring again in KJ Costello, because he took a ton of heat. There were a lot of turnovers that night in their loss against Kentucky. All right, let's go. Time for our picks. Last week you went 6-1. I went 5-2. You cannot claim that you went 7-0 with that junk you throw around where you make a pick on Wednesday and then on game day you change your mind and now you're picking A&M. Taylor says that this doesn't, you know, that's not kosher.
I didn't say anything about it, so I'm not complaining. I'm just telling you when I watched the tape.
Strike, because you know it's coming.
When I watched the tape and I studied it more, I had more information, and on game day I picked A&M and I was the only one and I got laughed at, but that's okay.
Yeah, it worked out. Way. Pat yourself on the back on Saturdays, not here on Wednesdays. All right, let's go with our game. All right. Cincinnati versus Tulsa, and I picked this game because Bearcats laying 3 points, and you're sitting there like, whoa, who you got?
Yeah, I understand it. I don't look at Cincinnati as a team that rolls the Bearcat helmet out there, and all of a sudden they're in there and they're winning. I mean, remember last time we saw Tulsa, it was a pretty good outing.
Yep.
I mean, and they beat UCF, and honestly, they started off about as bad as you could in that game, and looked, I mean, penalties, they were awful, and then all of a sudden turned it around and beat the crap out of them.
They've had UCF's number, and they should have won the Oklahoma State game if their offense did anything in the second half.
I don't know about should have, but I mean,
they played really well in that game early on, and then the offense was just, oh God, the offense.
They scored 7 points. I don't know how they should have won, but okay. Anyways, so I get how this will be a good game. I do think Cincinnati wins. I love Cincinnati's defense. I love the way they play. I think their defense is enough to hold down Tulsa. I think UCF's defense is really bad. I think it's going to be a big problem for them all season long. I think Cincinnati's defense keeps them in checks, force some turnovers. Cincinnati wins the game by more than 3, by the way.
Yeah, I'm with you. Cincinnati, we're lockstep there. Auburn -3 versus South Carolina.
You go first.
I'm going to go with Auburn, but I've just got to see more from Auburn.
honestly, like I go into each week saying I have no idea what we're going to get from Bo Nix, and I'm not sure anybody on the Plains feels comfortable that you're going to get consistency from Bo Nix. So I'm going with Auburn over South Carolina, but it's one of those. It's because I believe more on the talent side of Auburn over South Carolina's side.
It's not Bo Nix, by the way. It's the responsibility of the coaching staff to put you in a position to succeed, and they continually do not do that. I mean,
a Gus thing?
Who else are we going to blame? Chad? Like, he just got there and it's supposed to be different. They don't run their offense. There's no answers in their offense. There's no hot routes. There's no attacking matchups. They put wide receivers. By the way, Tank's a man, by the way. Tank's Bigsby. Have you seen this? This kid is legit. Like, he needs to be a dude soon because he is a tank. The way he runs, he's one of the best running backs in the country. He's the second best running back in the SEC from what I've seen so far this season. I mean, that's pretty high praise. I think he's a stud, but I'm not with you, by the way, at all on Auburn. I'm taking South Carolina, and I don't know why I would ever say that, but I like South Carolina. I think they'll fight. Kevin Harris, by the way, has came out of nowhere, and he looks really good at the running back spot. Shai Smith is good at the receiver spot. I think they can move the ball offensively. I think Bobo has a good – I think he has a good feel for offense and enough to beat Auburn up front. And I love the way Will Muschamp's defense competes and fights, and I think this is a lower-scoring game, but I think South Carolina wins.
I like it. I like it. All right, Kentucky versus Tennessee. Tennessee, I thought – felt. You know, they played two quarters really well against Georgia. They just basically got dominated by Georgia's defense in the second half. I mean, and Georgia will do that to anybody. So who do you got in this one? Kentucky, Tennessee.
I got Tennessee. Big bounce back week for them. A lot of things they can work on. Their quarterback is still an issue, but I think this week will be a lot more fun because they're going to be like, wait a minute, it's fun to run the ball, not on Georgia. So I think they'll enjoy that. And I tell you what, Terry Wilson's going to put up gaudy numbers, and he's leading the team in rushing and passing. He's got two touchdown passes, by the way, two this season, like not last week, like two. He doesn't scare me as a passer. They got a good offensive line, but I think you can be aggressive. I think Pruitt will have them ready on defense. I think Tennessee wins again.
It's been a disappointment for Kentucky to start the season.
Yeah, and they could be 3-0 easily. Easily could be 3-0.
LSU, Florida, obviously with the unknown, but who you got in this game if they do play in the Swamp?
Florida, easy.
Yeah, Florida, I'm with you.
I could sit here and justify it, but that's to me is easy.
Okay. Mississippi State, A&M. We brought up the emotion. Mississippi State is a dog, 6.5 points. A&M on the road. Who you got?
I got A&M. I think here's what I liked about last week. When you saw A&M finally in the second half, like they played well in the first half and Mon played well. Actually, Florida didn't stop them one time on third down in the first half. The second half was a different – go turn on the tape of the second half of that ball game. A&M did? They lined up and said, I'm punching you right in the face, and I'm running downhill with Spiller. I am literally with Smith. I'm just coming downhill right now. They physically just took the wind out of Florida and just kept pounding the rock. If not for a fumble, they probably would have scored on almost every single possession that game for the whole game. And I think they can do the same thing this week against Mississippi State. I think they'll have a good day. I trust the Aggies, even though they had a big win last week, to still respond and understand their physicality attack.
I had Pitt Miami on here. I think we both agree that Miami's going to win that game, right? I mean,
I do, but Pickett kid's really turned the corner. I will say that.
Pickett, I joke around, but it feels like Pickett's been there for 10 years.
It does, but he was the reason why I would never pick Pitt in the beginning of the year. But now, dude, he's dependable. He's. I'll tell you what, did you see that? How about that last week? 58-yard field goal by your kicker to send you into OT, and then you miss an extra point in overtime to lose. Like, is there any higher than high, lower than low feeling in the world? Kicker bombs it from 58, going nuts. BC scores, extra point. You score, missed extra point. Like, yeah.
And that's why hashtag college kickers trends each and every Saturday.
Kickers period. But.
All right, Georgia, Alabama, Bama laying the six. Straight up, who you got?
Oi! Are you going to pick first at all? By the way, you're supposed to pick first at some point, so pick first.
I have been, but conveniently, no, I just bring it up to you, and you don't hesitate. You just make a pick, so I've been enjoying you going first.
Go.
Jeez, I really like Georgia's defense. I mean, this game comes down, in my mind, if Stetson Bennett can make a couple of deep throws to keep Bama's defense honest. Man.
Can he pull the trigger or not?
I'm going to Alabama.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to point this. This is called, he needs a little syrup with his waffle.
I'm going to Alabama.
Okay. I really wanted you to pick Georgia and go on the other side just to make sure I'm covered there. Either way. here's my concern for this game. I think Georgia's defense is elite. I think it's insane up front. I think it's deep. I think it's good at every single position. I think there's one spot where you can attack Georgia's defense, and I think it's in the slot. Who plays in the slot for Alabama? That'd be Mr. Waddle. That boy fast. That boy good. I think it'll be interesting to watch that matchup, whether it's Stevenson, number 7, or Webb, number 23. To see if they can slow down. Alabama will have the most success of the season by far against this defense. And then it's Stetson Bennett's turn. And I just Alabama at home. I think Alabama this point in the season right now, I think Alabama's offense is way further along than Georgia's. And I think they win it because of their offense.
All right. So you're picking against your alma mater. Cool, cool. So you're going with Bama. All right.
I'm telling America who I think is going to win.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so. We'll let everybody know. You went against the dogs. All right. Well, let's try something.
I went against Temple last week, too. How'd that work out?
I went with my alma mater because, you know, I believe in my school. So that's
well, that's why you're 10-9 on your picks, too. Yeah. But that's okay.
Yeah. Hey, so let's do this with our picks here before we go. Let's add some spice here. And let's go with an upset special. And that means if you win it, yeah, you get 2 points in our little chart this season. Right now, you've got a 3-point lead. So my upset special is going to be not because we talked about it on Monday, not because Herbie's been talking about it. It's because I really like what
Boston
I've seen happily in Boston College. And it's not a knock against Virginia Tech, but I'm taking Boston College to knock off Virginia Tech.
Okay. You just have to be an underdog, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, okay. They're 11.5 point dogs.
That's a good one. I mean, that's a ballsy one. Like because you're throwing this on me now, thinking about upset and have to be, and looking at the point spreads now, because I gotta figure out. Because by the way,
he says I'm throwing this on him now like it was a surprise. I told him this 10 minutes before the podcast. I brought it up. I texted him.
Kevin, by the way, I love how you text me the picks 10 minutes before the podcast. That's amazing.
I'm sitting down and I'm looking at the latest lines. Like
America, how much he thinks about your picks. That's how much he cares about you, America.
I'm not holding this on like Sunday morning. Oh, I've got these games. We're going to surprise Pollock. It's 10 minutes before we take tape. I'm like, all right, well, let's see what the latest lines are. Let's go. And then we'll have the juiciest picks.
America, that's how much prep he puts in, just to point that out there.
Some people have SportsCenter. Some people have other things to do. They can't just sit there and be on one show once a week and just watch a bunch of film.
See, here's the thing. I'm looking at all these lines. I'm looking at all the picks, and all of them are against the ones I would pick, South Carolina, because that's I picked them anyways.
So you're going to double down. See, there we go. Okay, we can buy that. That's your double down game.
Okay, I like that. Yeah.
So not only if South Carolina wins, you'll get 3 points, not just the one.
How hard are you going to be cheering for Auburn this week at 12 o'clock? Like, are you going to literally be glued to that game watching?
I may go upstairs and find the Bo Jackson Auburn jersey and put that on in studio watching that game.
That's amazing.
I will be a huge, huge Tiger fan, and Bo Nix is my guy. That's how I'm going to be that entire.
Yeah, Mr. Inconsistency you were just talking about is my guy this week. Yeah, hey,
absolutely. To take you down, heck yeah. We're going with that, no doubt about it. Here's the difference, too. You noticed it, this, Taylor. We're going to get this. I went with a team that was a double-digit dog, and this guy goes with a field goal spread. Like, you don't take any risks here. That, like, hey, that's
whenever you're ready to, make stipulations on this, or just, I believe I asked, do I take an underdog?
No stipulation.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
No,
okay,
I'm just not worried about it. I'm not scared. Hey, have fun in Tuscaloosa. Enjoy the week. I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Appreciate it, big homie.
And it's great to have ESPN senior writer, college football, I should say, historian. Is that Ivan, do you like that, a historian, considering the way you've been involved in the game through the years? Is that even a good introduction? Ivan Maisel joining us here on the podcast.
Are you calling me old, Kevin?
No, sure. Not at all. But your perspective is essential here for many of us as we do a kind of like a read react thing to what we're seeing every single week. But having that balance is really important for us. Again, you can go back to certain things where I'm like, oh, I didn't even think about that. And so I feel like this season has been stuff that we've never thought about or ever anticipated. After several weeks of watching games in the pandemic and watching teams coming out of, you know, COVID and being undermanned and the dilemma, are we playing here? Are we moving here? Is this game postponed? What are your early observations of this season?
I miss tackling. You know, tackling is good. We don't get that anymore. Typically, Kevin, the first couple of weeks of the season are sloppy because everything's at game speed and nothing's been at game speed leading up to that. But we're so excited that the season is here that we just all kind of gloss over that. And, you know, we are all excited that the season finally got here, but they went from zero to game speed. I mean, nobody really, you know, there were very few spring practices. There was very little summer work. And then all of a sudden, everybody was trying to be at game speed. And the games have been exciting, but it's not, I would say that we're still lacking in the quality that we usually get by week seven. And, you know, and as I say, week seven, that even sounds weird because, you know, next week somebody else is starting. So it's a unique season. That's the best. That's the nicest thing you can say about it.
Yeah, we talked briefly about this with Pollock, and it's been a discussion this week with Herb Street and Pollock and me about the defenses or lack thereof. And it feels like miscommunication, maybe a lack of effort and poor tackling. I've said that we've seen this, like you can make the same discussion here in the NFL, that we're not seeing quality tackling. And this is like the buildup over the last few years. And we're seeing it all play out here. The difference, and you brought this up quickly here, the difference is, you know, in November, we're going to see a different type of football from, you know, all the teams that have been playing and then pressing the reset button and watching the Big Ten and Pac-12 acclimate. Do you think the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, the American teams in the group of five, do you think that we'll see a different style of play in November because they've gotten the first 2 to 3 to 4 games out of the way?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the quality will be different. You know, and God bless the, I don't know how the playoff committee is going to measure, you know, teams that are in mid to late season form against teams that are still trying to remember how to put their shoulder pads on. You know, how do you measure, you know, A versus B? You know, not to mention, as I've begun to talk to Big Ten coaches, you know, let's not forget, they're going to be scraping off rust as the weather gets bad. You think it's hard to tackle, you know, and throw the ball accurately now. How about doing it when you haven't done it in months and the wind is whipping the way it does in some of those Midwestern stadiums? I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see how quickly all these guys can scrape off the rust and play something that looks like college football.
I mean, which teams have stood out so far in your mind?
Well, I think Clemson has has looked good on both sides of the ball. You know, haven't really played somebody that can challenge them, and there may not be anybody until they get to Notre Dame who can. Georgia's defense is, I think, very good, and you know, may make a difference as soon as Saturday night. You know, and other than that, there's been any number of offenses that have just been spectacular. And individual players. I mean, you know, we're all, you know, I think the Travis Etienne versus Najee Harris argument is going to be fun as the season goes on. And not to mention Kyron Williams at Notre Dame and Khalil Herbert, the little guy at Virginia Tech. You know, so there've been individual players that have struck my fancy, but just the prolific offenses and very little defense.
Yeah, you mentioned some great running backs. The North Carolina backfield has been fantastic, and this is a team that put up 56 points. Your thoughts on what Mac has done in a year and a half to be in, and I understand that we don't have the Big Ten. I understand we don't have the Pac-12, but to be in the conversation where this program is a top five program this week when it comes to the rankings, I think we all anticipated that Mac would turn things around, but for it to happen as quickly as it has, it just shows that he's lined up the right people, and he still has the magic touch in connecting with young men.
Yes, and I would be lying if I thought it would happen this quickly or, you know, this level of success. You know, honestly, if you try to come up with head coaches who have stepped, you know, who have retired from the game or been fired from the game, and then come back at his age and had this level of success, you're going to have to enlighten me, because I can't think of anybody else. And the fact that, you know, Mac has, and this is, you know, this is the Mac of up to 2010, not after 2010, you know, so they're playing well, they're playing, there's clearly a esprit de corps there, that, you know, camaraderie and a team feeling at North Carolina that we haven't seen, and that has been the hallmark of Mac's best teams. And, you know, I'm flabbergasted, frankly, Kevin. I just didn't think it would happen.
Yeah, the impact of Sam Howell, when you have a quarterback that can make plays and immediately get on the field as a freshman, and then, you know, year number two, it just shows that he can still walk into a room or get on a phone and find a way to recruit kids. And then when he brings that talent there, there is no Texas pressure. I thought you brought up a great point, too, that Mac was building something at Texas, finding a way. And then I think that his success kind of jumped back and hurt him with the expectations of that entire fan base. When you reach the mountaintop, and then there are these unreasonable expectations at Texas that have not gone away, as Charlie Strong and Tom Herman can attest, that it sometimes that pressure, it just doesn't make it fun day in and day out going to work. And as we go into, you know, the questions about Texas's future, what would you think would be the best option for this program in finding a way to get out of it and finding a way to turn it around?
I think the biggest question Texas has at this point is to not let the controversy over the song, The Eyes of Texas, split the team and the way that it is splitting the fan base. And I think there's a generational thing going on in the fan base. You know, the older alums are furious, and older alums are usually the ones writing the checks. And so, and none of this would affect Tom Herman if they had made one more play against Oklahoma, or you know, when you struggle on the field, then all sorts of problems crop up that wouldn't be problems otherwise. And I think if they don't start winning, that thing is really going to begin to bubble. And I don't know how he's going to turn that around.
Yeah. And you're making a reference to, of course, the lyrics in the song. And we saw a lot of changes made at Texas. It kind of spilled over Saturday. It's been building, but loss, losing a 4 overtime game to Oklahoma. And then, you know, there's a picture of Sam Ehlinger standing all by himself with the song there. And there were a few players still on the field. But when you're starting a news conference on Monday and you have to read a statement about the school song, it just shows you where the program is. There are a lot of layers to this. Obviously, winning can cure some things, right? Or at least it can cover some things. And that's a great point of trying to keep the team together and finding a way as it is. That has generated a lot of emotions with the fan base as well as inside the locker room. And Tom Herman will be tested. And you don't have football this week because you have a bye, and then that can kind of linger on moving forward. So we'll see how that plays out in the next few weeks surrounding the program. Going from Texas to the other side of Oklahoma, and I'm not saying Lincoln Riley needed the win because considering his resume, but the idea that Oklahoma would have been 1-3, it was a desperate win for him as he tries to figure out, hey, Spencer Rattler's going to be our guy here. I don't have the experience from those three previous quarterbacks who were in the Heisman conversation year in and year out. I now have to go forward with this talented young man, Spencer Rattler, and find a way. What challenges do you think that presents for Oklahoma and Lincoln Riley the rest of this season as this freshman, who redshirt freshman, is trying to figure things out week in and week out?
We're so used to seeing Lincoln Riley work his magic at Oklahoma. He's now having to face what any coach has to face when you're starting a redshirt freshman at quarterback. I mean, to me, big picture, I'm kind of surprised he didn't find somebody on the waiver, in the transfer portal that could serve as a bridge to get to Rattler. And maybe, I'm thinking out loud, Kevin, but maybe these days you can't make a young quarterback sit more than 1 year, without him leaving to go somewhere else. And, maybe this is just, what happened in a sport where your roster turns over so quickly. He got caught short of experience at quarterback, and he was able last year to bring in a Jalen Hurts who did magnificent work, but he didn't have him this year. And just all the obstacles to get to this season, they lost a couple of more players than they might have otherwise. So it's a transitional year at OU. And given what's gone on in the Big 12, they're certainly not out of the race, but they're having to learn on the job. And that's hard, no matter whether you're Spencer Rattler or, the guys, the Max Howells of the world. There's just not that many of them.
Excellent point there, too, considering when you look at the rest of the schedule for Oklahoma, TCU, Texas Tech, Kansas, and then November 21st, the date against Oklahoma State. And then West Virginia and Baylor, they could be right back into that conversation for heading into that date against Oklahoma State. We'll see how that plays out for a team like Iowa State, which has figured a lot of stuff out in the last few weeks, getting back to, I think, the expectations that we had at the beginning of the season surrounding the Cyclones. Ivan, always great to have you on with us here on the podcast. Always great to have your perspective. And we look forward to having you back sometime in November. Hopefully we'll have better tackling, and then we could talk a little bit about the Big Ten and the Pac-12.
Love to do it, Kevin. Thanks a lot.
Big thanks to Ivan Maisel for his perspective. Always feel smarter there. And when he tells us what he thinks about the state of the game and brings up the past and the comparables. As well as David Pollack, who was a little hot today, and he had some strong opinions. And one day, my dream will come true, and we'll have Pollack on SportsCenter, and I'll give him a shot sheet, and bounce some stuff around and see if he could handle it. That would be a lot of fun, at least for me, as I will just sit there and watch him handle the pressure. And Taylor Schwenk on the other side, who keeps us honest here each and every week when we make our picks with Pollock, who likes to just change his picks on Saturdays each and every time. I know I mentioned the BC Virginia Tech upset special. Keep an eye on the Liberty game against Syracuse. The Cuse, a dog, and obviously questions at quarterback, but 3.5 points. Wow, that was a stunner there. I would think Syracuse wins outright, and we'll have this as proof when I bring it up to Pollock. Taylor, I should have brought that up to him. Enjoy the podcast. Enjoy the week. If you guys want to have more football, I just ask you to stay safe, social distance, and wear a mask.